What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Seven Figure Flipping Podcast. This is Bill Allen. I have an amazing show for you today. You really need to listen to this one. If you listen to one podcast all year, it probably should be this one. I've got Brad Chandler. He's the owner and creator, founder of Express Home Buyers, one of the biggest home buying companies on the planet, frankly. And we talk about something a little bit different. We talk about how he got into real estate, how he built his company, what he's doing. But then we really talked about the work that we need to do as a human being, as a person, to really get to next level in our business and our life. How to make your relationship with your kids better, how to make your relationship with your spouse better, the relationship with yourself better. We spent a lot of time talking a lot about like mindset and worth and things like that for you and all the work that he's doing right now. So do not miss this episode. Make sure that you stay tuned in, and I hope you guys enjoy it.
My name is Bill Allen, and I'm the leader of a group of elite house flippers and wholesalers called Seven Figure Flipping. We don't brag or show off our success, but instead let integrity and stewardship be our guide. We are dedicated to helping people unlock the freedom they desperately need. If you ask other real estate investors, they will say to keep your secrets quiet. But we believe in abundance, not scarcity, and that's why we are the elite. We are Seven Figure Flipping, and this podcast is our playbook.
What's up, everyone? I have an amazing show for you today, and actually a show that I'm most excited to record because I want to learn more about our guest too, some of the things that he did to build his business and where he is now, because he's got a lot of wisdom to share. I've watched his journey from afar for many, many years, and it's really cool. I don't often bring guests like this on the show, so it's going to be a lot of fun to talk to Brad today and just kind of get to know his background, his story, his business, and more about his life, because I think he's got a lot of wisdom to share for you and can help you a ton in your business and your life right now. So my guest today is Brad Chandler. What's up, Brad? How are you?
Hey, I'm awesome. Thanks for having me.
I'm happy that you're here. I know this is a show I've been looking forward to since you kind of reached out and we talked back and forth. And I met you like many years ago when you were fighting a trademark, this like We Buy Houses. I think it was We Buy Houses.
Yeah, right? We Buy Houses lawsuit, yeah.
And that... to me, like on that call, I was just kind of like a fly on the wall. It was Andy and Justin on the call. But in that call, I saw somebody who was willing to stand up for something that they believe in and to fight for the little guy. So you were in a part of your business and your life probably where you could be the voice and you had the influence and you had the power and the ability to actually take a stand. And you did. And when everybody else was like, oh, I hope this doesn't happen. There's people that like stand back and watch, and then there's people that actually get in the trenches. And that was just a total defining moment for me that I was like, if anything ever comes up or you ever need me for something or there's anything I can do, I'll be there, even though we had never really met before. So that was a defining point of me actually seeing. I try to learn from everyone, like anybody that comes into my life, I can learn from them what to do or what not to do. And just that short call is probably like 30 minutes of just watching you guys interact as a higher level group of investors. And I was still kind of, my business was pretty small. We were doing like 50 houses a year. And it was really just really cool to watch. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And why don't you tell everybody who you are and a little bit about you?
Yeah. Who am I? Brad Chandler. Just like everyone else, I'm a soul searching for love. I read a book in ninth grade on how to buy real estate with no money down. And I knew that I always wanted to do real estate because it had the opportunity to make a bunch of money. And we'll talk more about why that was so important in my life in a few minutes. But yeah, I read a book in ninth grade. And then an investor bought my neighbor's house in Vienna, Virginia in late 2002. I went and talked to him. He said, yeah, I buy houses at below market, fix them up and resell them. I'm like, okay. I don't remember that you could buy below market reading that book, because I thought you got rich in real estate by putting down 20% and holding the house until it paid off. So I was like, I'm going to do it. Well, my son had just been born in July, and I was working a full-time job. So I'd come home from 6, spend 6 to 8 p.m. with him, put him to sleep. And then from like 8 to 11, I'd pound We Buy Houses signs, or I'd hand address hundreds of envelopes. And each month that went by, I wasn't getting a deal, Bill. It took me 8 long months to find my first deal. I didn't have a mentor to go to like you. So I bought my first house in July. I bought 6 houses in July and August. And then I went to my boss in August of 2003. And I said, I quit. And I came home. I told my wife at the time, yeah, I just quit. And she's like, have you lost your mind? We've got a newborn kid and I've got 2 kids that you're supporting. Like, what are we going to do? And I was like, it's fine. I'll start Express Home Buyers. We'll be fine. And 20 something years later, 4,000 houses. It was all fine.
That is incredible. So it took me 4.5 months to find my first deal after I joined the seven-figure flipping program when I paid. And the reason was, it was just like, it's putting in the reps. Like, I had to understand, I had to learn along the way. People think that like it happened for me like 1 month in or 2 weeks in, or it's going to happen really, really fast. Yours is 8 months. I just like wrote it down side by side, 2003, 8 months, me 2015, 4.5 months. And I was spending $5,000 a month. I wasn't handwriting cards. I was like paying for mail, and I had a team member because I was flying full time. But the same story, like I would get up in the morning before my family got up and I would work. Then I'd go play with my son in the morning, make breakfast. I'd go to work. I'd fly 10 or 12 hours a day. And then after that, I'd come home. I'd have dinner with my family, put my son to bed. My wife would go watch TV. I'd go in the office for another 2 hours. And that was my life for a year. I said, Lucy, my wife, I said, I'm going to work for a year. And after that, like, I think that I can build a business that will have it made. And she was like, I believe in you, so go do it. And for a year, put in the time. And then after that, it was, I just took off. 4,000 houses. We've probably done 1,000. So that's incredible. 4,000. What about now? So, okay, let's see. You started that. That was 2003. Was it easy to kind of ramp up Express Home Buyers? For those that don't know, when I started flipping houses, I did my first in Southern Maryland, in Patuxent River, Maryland. And so Express Home, I would go to these RIAs and these meetups around then. It was like 2013 when I flipped my first house there. And this Express Home Buyer company was like everything people would talk about in that kind of Delmarva area, right? So maybe tell everybody a little bit about that business and what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, you said, was it tough? I like I said, in 2003, I bought my first house. In 2005, the first 6 months on paper, we netted like $1.5 million. So I'm thinking I'm the smartest guy in the world. I was going to be retired. So we started buying development deals. We bought three development deals that cost us $3 million and took us like 10 or 11. One of them took us 10 or 11 years to extract ourselves from. So now, last year we did 223 deals. The year before, 253 deals. Hopefully we're going to hit 300 this year. And we primarily, you know, we fix and flip and we wholesale, just like a lot of folks.
I don't want to get past this. You, on paper, you made like $1.5 million, and then you got into some development deals. Were you taking all the money at that time and just like dumping it back into growing the business, or were you pulling money out of your company?
No, we weren't pulling any money out. We were just rapid growth mode. Yeah, those three development deals we bought in the summer of 2005. So a lesson learned is, just because you're good at one thing doesn't mean that you can go, you know, flipping houses was a whole different ballgame than taking one of the houses was a house in North Arlington on the street called Lorcombe Lane, which I'll never forget. And our smart sells were just going to buy this house, knock it down and just cut the lot in two and put two houses up, right? We're going to make like $1.5 million. We're smart. We hired an engineering consultant company. We went hard on the deposit, and then like a couple of days later, they're like, we made a mistake. That's a corner lot, so you can't subdivide it. We lost $934,000 on that one house bill. And the crazy thing, or the interesting thing, it's not crazy, is that we had no personal guarantees with our lender at the time. So we could have easily just been like, sorry, guys, we're out, and then gone to a hard money lender. But we didn't, because that's not how I operate. He gave us a couple percentage breaks on the interest, but we had to pay everything back, and he gave us 2 years and we paid it off in 13 months. But for a couple of years, all we did was like get our pay for these freaking development deals. I mean, I made five business mistakes from 2005 to 2017 that cost myself and my partner $9 million.
Wow. what were some of the other ones, and can we learn from them and how?
So the We Buy Houses cost us $1.9 million. When I started that, the attorneys were like, yeah, you're going to top out at maybe six figures, maybe 200,000. And I thought for sure that investors would completely rally around me. Of the $1.9 million, we only raised about $100,000. So we had to foot the rest of that bill. So that was a big chunk. In 2008, we started a Keller Williams team with my good friend Leo Pareja. And in 2 years, we were the number one Keller Williams team. It was my goal to be the first agent team to sell $1 billion with a B real estate in 1 year. So I was just focused on top line. And we woke up in 2010 when the tax credits went away, like overnight, the first time homebuyer tax credits. And my business partner at the time says, I think our inventory just went from $24 million in ARV to $21 million. And he's like, shit's going to hit the fan. And I think we just lost $1 million in this realty business. So Leo bought it from us. So that was another $1 million. I equate about $3 million to fix and flips that we did. We had 80 fix and flips going on at any given time from Waldorf to like Frederick. It was like almost a 4-hour drive with a heavy traffic. What else? I try to forget some of these mistakes. I think I just accounted for most of them there.
Well, I think a lot of times we can learn as much from like what worked versus what doesn't work, obviously. So a couple things that I guess, what would you attribute the most of those to, from not necessarily the exactly what happened, but from like a personality, character, thing you might see from a CEO or a visionary that?
Yeah, it's very easy. I didn't see it then, but they were all me trying to chase my worthiness. I didn't know it up until 3 years ago when I went through this major life transformation. I did not know it, but I had low self-worth. I was the guy who said, I love myself. I had high self-esteem and I didn't care what other people thought. But now looking back, once you get out of the fog of your subconscious memory that drives all of your behavior, and I can look back over my life, like everything now makes sense. So I was thinking, I was always chasing, what can I get that's going to make me happy? If I can just do these development deals, I could have made $10 million on those development deals, Bill. It would have made a difference. I still would have felt the same. I bought a boat and you know, a 42-foot boat. I'd never owned a boat in my life. And I'm like, I'm going to take this to the Bahamas. I didn't wake up and say, I need to do this because I'm unworthy. But my subconscious mind was screaming, you're no good. You better do something that's going to like get people's attention so you can catch their worthiness. So all of it. I mean, I opened a Virginia Beach market. I was talking to one of the employees, long gone since then, but I drove down there in like 98 or 2000. Not 98, 2000, like 2012. And I opened an office within a week and staffed 5 people. Well, we couldn't even keep our brochure boxes filled properly in the DC market, but I was going and opening another market. And it's so clear to me now because I've done the work, but I'm not the only one. I go to these masterminds. I see the same people doing the same shit over and over and over again. They think, and just like me and so many entrepreneurs, that you get into business so that you can make a bunch of money so you can find your happiness. And it doesn't work that way. It's just the opposite. Like nothing from outside yourself can bring you happiness. Everything you've ever needed to be happy, you have within you right now. So the trick is, do the work today so that you can figure out, number one, what your purpose is. But this destination 5 years from now where you're going to be this happy, fulfilled person, you can have that today. And if you get that today, the chances of you making the $5 or $10 million in 5 to 10 years are like through the roof greater than if you didn't do the work and you do stupid stuff like I did, just chasing these, you know, shiny objects everywhere.
Do you think that the people that are like go-getters, driven, you know, striving for things, constantly wanting to be the best, are the people that like they should be looking at this, or should everybody be looking at this? What's kind of a
Yes and yes and yes. This all stems from, it's a simple formula. Your brain is being formed between the ages of the third trimester and 22 years old, if you're a male. But for your formative years, it's, you know, between the birth and like 10 years old. And we have certain times in our lives. I've yet to meet someone who didn't, if your needs weren't met as a child, you've got to come up with a reason. There's got to be a story explaining why those needs weren't being met. And typically it's, something's wrong with me. I'm not good enough. I don't deserve love. So the question you asked is a really, really good one. I believe that if you look at not only top CEOs or top people in our business or top athletes, look at Tiger Woods, look at Tom Brady, those guys, as good as they look on the outside, maybe not Tiger because he's almost killed himself a couple of times recently, but Tom Brady is a perfect example. After his 6th Super Bowl, he released a video that he spent time and money on putting down all his naysayers. After 6 Super Bowls, what drives those guys? Is it greatness or is it to prove their worth? I believe it's mostly to prove their worth. So it's not, to answer your question, the second part is, no, it's not only that person. It's the person who has a shitty marriage, who's not in a relationship because they're scared, who drinks too much, eats too much, has depression, anxiety, OCD, is pissed off all the time. All of those things trace back to the same exact reason that I had my issues and that I lost all that money. And the thing is, it's not your fault. It's just your brain trying to protect you from something that it thinks is more painful.
Okay. So if it's just everything that you just named is like everyone on the planet, it seems like, or at least maybe not everybody on the planet, because I've been to some countries where there's just happiness, where they have nothing. And that to me, like when we went on a few mission trips and saw the kids that were playing that didn't even have a ball or shoes or anything like that, just so happy. It was very eye-opening for me, and to see all the kids that we brought with us to see if like their life through their eyes going, how are they even happy? They don't have anything. They're like, no, they have everything that they need. So if it's, let's just say everybody in Western culture or the United States. And so if it's most of the folks here, like what's the next step? Like how do we, what should I do if I want to try to figure out if it is that worthiness or how do I find kind of happiness?
Yeah. So there's a bunch of different ways you can go about it. At the end of the day, though, all of those things I mentioned are the medical community wants to call symptoms, right? Drinking too much, eating too much, obesity, depression, anxiety. I'm going to call those solutions. They're actually solutions to something that your mind thinks is even worse. So this isn't super easy work to do on your own, but let's say you want to take this on your own. Let's say you would get yourself in a deeply relaxed meditative state. Go listen to a, you know, super relaxing YouTube meditation for 10 or 15 minutes. And then whatever your issue is, let's just use drinking because that's a big issue, obviously. You drink too much and you usually drink because of something. Well, get yourself in a deeply relaxed state and then ask yourself, put yourself in that exact same situation that makes you drink every day, but this time you don't drink. What do you feel like? And usually your brain's going to go to, oh, I feel great. I feel peace. I feel happiness, freedom, whatever. No. You're drinking for a reason. It's to avoid something negative. What is that thing that you're trying to avoid? Whatever that thing is that you're trying to avoid, that's the thing that drives the drinking. What that thing often is, Bill, is it's an untrue meaning or story or belief that was formed between the ages of like 2 and 8 and 10 that you don't even know is driving you. You know, I've had 100 clients now. Did any of them show up and be like, Brad, I really need your help. I have anxiety or I have depression. And here's exactly why I have it. No, they're just like, I have this issue and I have no idea. So once you find that issue, and let's say that I drink because if I'm my real self, people won't love me. Because when I was 6 years old, my mom, I told her I hated her and she yelled at me and cried for 2 hours and then dad came home and hit me. So I drink because I don't want to face my real self, because if I face my real self, love will be taken. Then you ask yourself, where in your life have you shown your real self where love wasn't taken? And then your brain has this thing called a mismatch detector. It's like ding, 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 ding. Wait. I'm believing that if I'm my true self and show my emotions, people withdraw their love. But I remember when I told Aunt Sally, blah, 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 and she loved me. So, oh my gosh, I can't believe these two things. When that thing evaporates, the drinking evaporates. This is new technology, Bill. Like 20 years ago, they had, from Freud up until 2004, they believed that these memories that were formed as a child, they're called implicit memories, were stuck with you forever. Now they know through neuroscience that you can literally make these neurons labile. That's what the medical terminology is, which basically means they become flexible. They become moldable. So you get them mobile by talking about the situation. And then you bring in another situation that's a complete opposite. And you're like, oh my gosh. And then you're literally plucking that neuron out that says, if I'm my authentic self, no one will love me. And you're putting in, I can be my authentic self and people will love me. And then as soon as you do that, boom, your symptoms vanish.
So we started talking about real estate. What's that?
That makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Totally. It takes me to a place in my head. I wrote down two things that, you know, I don't know, the past like 6-7 years, just Tony Robbins. I spent a lot of time listening to his stuff, going to his events. He said, there's two fears that everybody has. You won't be loved or you're not good enough. And I wrote this down to kind of ask you about it. Do you believe that's true? And if, because a lot of what you're talking about is going back to like, I won't be loved or I'm not good enough or not worthy of something. from the sound of
it. So this is beautiful. I thought you were going to ask me another question.
I was going to, but then you asked me if it made sense.
I thought you were going to say, we started talking about real estate, and I was wondering if you noticed my energy level shift when I started talking about the happiness stuff.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I'll put this one on the side. And what I was going to say is I was going to ask you how you got to this place from what you were doing, because you mentioned just a few years ago you started studying this and learning this. So I'd like to hear both.
So let me answer your question. Tony Robbins says that the two biggest fears we have are not being enough and not being loved. Yes, but was anyone on the planet ever born with those fears? No. The only two fears we're ever born with are fear of loud noises and fear of falling down. So this is making my point. So I'm so glad you said that. So if you weren't born with those fears, where do they come from? They came from something in your childhood. So it's not your fault. Whatever if you've been told you're a shitty husband, you're an alcoholic, you're no good, this or that. No, you're not. This isn't your fault at all. This is just your brain doing exactly what it should be doing. Disorder, all these disorders people talk about. It's not a disorder. You don't have a disorder. Your brain is doing exactly what it should be doing to protect you. So yes, Tony Robbins is right. I think most people on this planet to some degree have the thought that I am not enough. Some people it's so bad they're meth addicts. Some other people their marriage is just okay. It's just like, how does it affect you? And just because it affects you one way and another person doesn't make you right or wrong. So I try to stop saying the word childhood trauma, because so many people check out. I wouldn't have been someone who said I had childhood trauma. My dad hit me with a belt. My parents fought all the time. We almost lost our house and my dad made fun of me. Those are all traumas. Hello, those are all traumas. But people don't want to think of themselves as going through childhood trauma. They also don't want to put the blame on their parents. Or I literally had a client I just finished a session with, his fifth session, that his life has completely changed. And he told me, Brad, I didn't come to you for 6 months because I didn't want to disparage my parents. And now he understands that while your parents caused this, it's not their fault either. They did the absolute best that they could do. So if your kid right now has behavioral problems, if they have anxiety, depression, they're bad, they're not bad in school, they misbehave in school, they act out, and you want to know why, just grab your spouse and go to the bathroom, look in the mirror. That's the reason. Notice I didn't say it's your fault, because you're just doing what your parents did to you and what their parents did and what their parents did. So what's the greatest gift you can give your child? It's to break the multi-generational curse. And how do you do that? You teach your child how to love themselves unconditionally. How can you ever do that if you don't love yourself unconditionally? And if you think you love yourself unconditionally like I did, just do yourself a favor. Take the first step to something that may change your life. BradChandler.com/quiz. It's a 3-minute self-love quiz. It will tell you your level of self-love. If you lack self-love and you have kids with behavioral problems, ding, 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 there you go. But everything can be changed in a matter of like 3 to 5 hours. It's a beautiful thing.
I wrote down, I'm just taking notes myself. I'm sure you get this a lot. Everybody you talk to is like, wow, this is hitting me in different places, right? So I studied the hero's journey very deeply, the last like 5 years. And Michael Haig had a quote at his event that he did. And it said, everything starts with a wound. And he defined that as an unhealed source of continuing pain. And so as a military pilot, you know, for 20 years, we were just trained to kind of push it down. The word was compartmentalized. I basically compartmentalized everything in my life the entire time. You break up with a girlfriend, you had a bad day, something happened, didn't sleep that well. Compartmentalize that, because we got to go fly. Like we got to do whatever. We got to fly from ship to ship. We got to pick some people up. We got to drop off the SEALs. We got to do training. It didn't matter. Like whatever we were doing, combat search and rescue exercises. It's just compartmentalize and just put it in a box until it explodes. And so this is kind of like, you know, this wound that we have from any time. Like I remember calling my parents as I was going through a lot of this. My wife and I had a point in 2020, end of 2020, where just explosion. And I really rough place for us, to the point where we had to heal. We had to go through a lot. We went to a, you know, 3-day wellness workshop with a guy that I know. It was just a lot of soul searching, a lot of things that you're talking about, to the point where I started identifying like previous wounds in my life and actually feeling pain, like going through the process of feeling it and getting, trying to get past it. And so unpacking a lot of this stuff was like, relationships when I was younger, it was my parents. I called my parents. I'm like, hey, why do I have to be number one in everything? Like, why can't I just be number two? Why can't I just relax? What did you do to me? Basically, they're like, you know, hey son, it's kind of always been like that. And so just working through some of these things was very interesting. And what I wrote down specifically for me is teach your child to love themselves unconditionally. And you're right. I see my 9-year-old right now. Like, I know he's like right up to the point where I've done the best that I could without the manual, as a dad. And I want the best for him, but like, I'm still trying to like look in the mirror myself and figure out like, how can I serve him and my other kids and my wife and everybody around me and all the people that are influenced by me somehow, or I touch their life to be the best version of myself. So, I don't know. Maybe that, I saw you writing some things down. So maybe that opens.
Yeah. Yeah. So you should take the quiz because I know you told me your dedication to your kids and it's amazing. Take the quiz, have your wife takes a quiz and see where you stand, because this, if you lack self-love, and I have no idea if you do, but if you lack self-love, there's no way your kids aren't going to lack self-love, and they're going to go meet people that lack self-love too, because you never go meet someone with extreme self-love that lacks self-love. So by you feeling the pain and doing the work, there's a lot, love this saying, pain moves through families until someone's willing to feel it. Are you willing to feel it? Is the listener ready, willing to feel it? And it's not like mirrors of pain. It's literally 3 to 5 hours, and probably only 2 hours of that's actual pain, if that. You can change your family for generations. So yeah, I mean, a number of things you said so many great things. So relationship problems are never about the actual relationship. It's the relationship that each of you have with yourselves. Yeah. So marriage counseling doesn't really work too much. I went to 50 sessions with two wives, you know, go hold her hand more and go on more date nights and repeat back what she's saying so you can communicate her, you know, what she, all that is horse, you know what. If you've got the brain that most of us have saying you're not worthy, you're fighting for your worthiness. Now that I'm healed, I'm in a relationship that's night and day different. So that's something there. Your perfectionism. If you want to be number one, you've got to be perfect. You can never be perfect. It's something that you'll chase forever. Why does someone want to be perfect? Because their imperfect self as a child wasn't good enough. So they had to be perfect. And that's why we see so many adults. Our subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between age 1 and age 100. And why is that? Because your subconscious mind's only point is to keep you alive. So if you shook a bush and a lion bit you, jumped out and bit you at age 8, you don't want to forget that at 80. So it doesn't know the difference between yesterday and 30 years ago. That's why you've got to do the work to pull that little boy into today. The Navy SEAL, it was actually a Navy SEAL who your question 10 minutes ago that I diverted was, how did I get here? I was on a Zoom call with a performance coach and she said, you have a tick. And I'm like, what is she talking about? I have a tick on me. She's like, you blink profusely when you talk about your childhood. You may have some unresolved childhood trauma that's affecting your son's anxiety. Do you want to come out and work with my ex-Navy SEAL husband and me for a weekend in Park City? And I'm like, I've been a single dad. I do everything for my kids. There's no way that I could be affecting my son. I'm the greatest dad there is. Not really. I'm a great dad. I didn't say I was the greatest dad there is, but I did everything for my kids, right? So I was like, sure, I've tried everything. I've tried drugs. I've tried psychology. I've tried everything and nothing's working on this kid. So I went out there and I took him. And in the course of a weekend, or really 3 hours, my life forever changed. And what did we do? We went back to the times where my needs weren't met and we figured out the stories I told. And then we just reversed those stories. And through the science of neuroplasticity, which is just what I was talking about earlier, plucking out the neuron and putting a new one, my life changed so drastically that I came home and I saw all of these people in my company, in my family, in my networks that were suffering and are suffering. And I was like, oh my gosh, Bill. They're suffering for the same reason I was suffering. And I just fixed this shit in 3 hours. I've got to learn how to do this. So I started talking to people and they're like, wow, you're really good at this. And you're like, I'm getting more out of you than a therapist. And then I just started studying and I started studying under some of the best people. And that's what I've been doing now for the last 2.5 years is helping people change their lives and overcome these silly, they're not silly. They're actually needed, overcome these meanings that they placed years and years ago.
So one thing I've noticed as you've been talking is you're picking your words very carefully. And when you say something different, you're actually correcting yourself. So I'm sure I've done a lot of this work myself, is like, you know, our words are our thoughts are our feelings, these kind of things. So how do you feel about that? I just noticed you just did it and you're like, this is not silly actually. So
yeah, it's your thoughts start everything. Every single problem you have right now is a thinking problem. So if I'm thinking I'm an idiot, this is stupid, this is silly, that's what you're going to get. You've got to step out of fear and judgment and into curiosity. So instead of trying to say that's crazy, I mean, that's crazy is judging someone. I try to stay in a curious mode. So your the problems that you have today are not your fault, and they have absolutely 100% been formed for a valid reason that helped you tremendously through your life. Now they're not serving you, and now is the time to say enough is enough and I'm going to change. And if you can't do it for yourself, do it for your kids, do it for your spouse, do it for someone. Because when you make this change, you'll see the world in a completely different light. Your business will I had a guy, I don't know if you know Brent Bowers with Landsharks. He was one of my clients. He was on my podcast and he came to me with a racing mind. And now his relationship with his wife is better. His kid had behavioral problems. The kid's acting a lot better. He's like, Brad, do you realize I've doubled my income since I started working with you? He's like, I was afraid to sign up with you because I was like, how am I going to make this ROI? I'm a businessman. He goes, I'm crushing it now. When you figure out this, what's driving this one thing in your life that you want to change so badly, everything else falls too into place.
Yeah, the next question I was going to ask you, you kind of just answered it, was like, how does this benefit somebody who is a newer investor or, you know, this is obviously a real estate podcast. However, the reason why we're talking about this is because it affects everything in our lives. So I know that a lot of them, like the number one thing is not just mindset, but really like the feelings, the words, the thoughts that we have, all of these things are so powerful that they drive every decision that we make. I've been diving into decision making massively. The military did some amazing job of helping me like figure out how to make decisions, how to make them quickly, especially at high risk, and going through a lot of this. So how, maybe you can give some sort of idea to some of these people that you haven't already said. You pretty much answered it just now, but you might have some other thoughts.
So I'm going to tell you the story, and I think it's just going to make sense from what I say. For 20 years, I was in real estate. And now I understand why I was in real. Why did I read that book in ninth grade and decide real estate was for me? Because at 10 years old, when my parents divorced and my dad stopped supporting my mother and my two sisters and I, she said, we might lose this house and have to move into public housing. I had gone to that public housing with her and there were shootings there. So my 10-year-old brain said, without money, you're going to die. So I had to make a lot of money to be safe. So for 20 years, I tried to do that in real estate and I made millions and I lost millions. But did I ever really care about real estate? I lent a guy, a good friend of mine, about a year and a half ago. It's in a partition lawsuit. It's insane. It was supposed to take like 8 months. It's still going on a year and a half later in Miami. And he sent me the paperwork on that. And it was creatively done where there was an option and I don't even know, but there was like 20 pages, Bill. This was my money, tens of thousands of dollars. I couldn't even read the freaking documentation. But if you can see behind me and on my floor here, I've got hundreds of books. I could go on a beach right now, put an umbrella up in a warm area, like you said, because I don't like the cold. And I could read books on trauma, neuroscience, programming, the brain, for 8-10 hours a day and never get bored. Do you think that I'm going to be financially successful in this business if I'm on this podcast in a couple of years? Because I love it so much. I wake up every day. I can't get enough of it. As opposed to if I had to restart a real estate company or restart a happiness coaching, where is my, I'm proving it right now. I spend an hour a week in my real estate business kind of because I have to. And I spend all the other time in what I love. If you can find something that you love to do and you focus on making an impact, the money will always come. Yeah, I'll probably make more money in this business. I know I will than I'll ever make in real estate because it's not my focus. My focus isn't on taking money from people. I do charge and it is an investment because the more money I make, the more impact I can make. But this is the first business since I started selling blow pops in seventh grade that I didn't start with money in mind because I just want to make an impact. I want to give this gift back that has been so special in my life and so life transforming. I want to give it to as many people as I possibly can. Mm.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I used to buy candy in bulk and break it up and sell it in middle school.
That's what I did.
I think we were, and I did so well that I was able to
shut me down.
Oh yeah. They tried to kick me out of middle school, Burley Manor Middle School. If you're listening, you know, that was a budding entrepreneur that you really tried to shut down. And then I went in the military for 20 years and I found my entrepreneurship like 15 years into that. So I call myself a closet entrepreneur. So if somebody does want to work with you, what does that look like? Like, not necessarily pricing, maybe you can have that conversation offline or if you're open or discuss that, but really about like, what should they expect? Like a time commitment, how much work is this? Is it really painful? Like you could go through some of that stuff maybe.
Yeah. We say 7 hours a week is the time commitment you've got to put in over 5 weeks. We have a one-on-one component with myself or Yvonne. You would work with us over Zoom. And we also have a group component, a group mastermind that's absolutely phenomenal. And what to expect is we're going to do exactly what I did and what I've done now with over 100 people. We're just going to go back and figure out the times in your life where you create these stories, these meanings about yourself that aren't true. And then we're going to reverse them. I mean, that's the simple and the short of it. There's no drugs. You don't need psychedelics. All you need is the belief that you can change. And you need the trust in me that I can help you down that journey. And you've got to be ready for change because I have seen over and over and over. My mentors have done this thousands and thousands of times. And if you have a client that is willing and ready to do the work, it is going to be life-changing for you.
How does it affect the rest of your family when this happens? So the reason I ask that is I feel like... So number one, are you familiar with the change or die study?
No.
Okay. So when given this, like, people are more willing to die than they are to change. And so it was proven, I want to say it was Harvard. I wish I prepped for this. I have to look up the exact numbers and everything. But they gave these people like this option, like you're about to die or change through a series of experiments. And like people are more willing to actually physically die than actually change. And part of that, so that was just one thing that popped into my head. The next one is when you change, your family, your relationship, those kind of things can be affected by change. Like they're used to you being a certain way. And like, how have you seen the results of that? Obviously, is it better to have a supportive spouse that is like, you're having a tough relationship or you're always working all the time, nonstop, and they want you to change, and this is a great step? Or if you want to change, like, what are some things that you teach or coach through that of the people around you who are like, wait, you're changing? Because I've seen this in entrepreneurs a ton, that people are just like, I don't even know who you are anymore. You're not drinking anymore. You're not going out with us. You're not doing all these things. You're different in a good way to kind of have a challenge around the relationship, maybe both ways.
It's always better and easier if you have a supportive spouse, no doubt. But how it changes is, I'll give you a couple examples. One of my, and this is 100% confidential. The only time I talk about people is when they've publicly come out and done reviews with their names and faces on there. Otherwise, I don't talk about this stuff with anybody. But Jason is a client that I had. He's still in our program. He's still in our group mastermind. He came to me with his marriage on the brink of divorce like a year and a half ago. And now his marriage is amazing. Did I ever have a marriage counseling session with him? Nope. Did I ever meet his wife, talk to his wife? Nope. What I said earlier is the problem in relationships is the actual relationship that each individual has with themselves. So what we did is we got him reconnected to himself, and that changes relationship. How has it changed in my family? Both of my kids no longer have anxiety. They had severe anxiety. I've become way closer to my kids. So, you know, most of the time that's what happens. Sometimes people will, do this work, and then the spouse doesn't do the work, and they're like, wow, this is really tough to be with this person. I haven't seen that much, but it can happen. But here's the thing is once you do the work and you get rid of these beliefs and you have extreme self-love, there's nothing in your life where you can lose. If you get divorced from your spouse, now you're not going to go marry the same spouse. You're going to go find someone completely different, because I've attracted someone completely different than I would have you know, prior to me doing the work. So the change is good. The kids is a huge thing. We've talked about that already. Your kids are going to change by seeing you change. You're not going to yell at them as much. You're going to understand that they can't really make you mad. When they make you mad, it's just you bringing in your shit from, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
I just looked up change or die study. So, you can find all, read all about it. I think it's like 77% of the people would rather die than change.
Well, let me touch on that, Bill. Yeah. There's science behind that. And remember I said earlier, the subconscious mind, its only role is to keep you alive. Your subconscious mind has you exactly where it wants you. Why is it that people who come from abusive households end up in abusive relationships? Do they like the abuse? No. Who's going to like getting hit, right? Or violence inflicted on them? No. Their subconscious mind says, I kept you alive through this environment where you were hit. So I know I can keep you alive. So I'm going to put you in that same environment over and over and over again. So that's why change is so hard. And especially when you look at therapy, change is even harder with traditional therapy and marriage counseling because they focus on the symptoms and the conscious mind and they don't go deep. So I'm a certified hypnotherapist. I believe hypnosis is the best tool on the planet for that very reason, because what is it? It's just a deeply relaxed state. That's it. It's not chasing mice around and you drooling on yourself. You're completely in control. You're lucid. You can talk, but the conscious mind is turned off. So we can go and ask the subconscious mind. Your subconscious mind right this second knows the source of all of your problems. It's just, you never ask it in the right state. So let's say again, let's go back to the drinking. Bill, why is it that you drink? I'm making this up, obviously. And then I ask your subconscious mind, let's go to a scene, a time, a place, an event, all to do with why you drink so much. Well, my dad kept hitting me. My dad didn't show up to my soccer games. My dad worked 100 hours a week. He was never there. I was alone at home. I felt not enough. And I've got to live with this terrible pain. I'm not enough. So I used the drinking to mask it. That's it.
Yeah. So I did drink a lot when I was younger. So in the Navy, growing up, even I probably had my first drink when I was probably 14. Next door neighbor put like a case of beer next, out for us. We bought it, me and my friends. And when my son was born, so my dad stopped drinking, like took all the alcohol out of the house when I was a kid and didn't have any alcohol in the house to hope that, you know, we wouldn't see alcohol, have it around, those kind of things. And so I did the same thing about 9 years ago. I just like, I'm done drinking. And really, when I thought about drinking, I was like, man, I have alcoholism in my family, all this stuff, like really addictive personality kind of things. And I'm done drinking. And when I look back, all the stuff that you're saying, the reason why I was drinking is because growing up, I was short, I was picked on, I was bullied, I was an athlete, I was popular, all these things, but all that stuff was still happening. There were jokes that were made, all these things. It was all self-worth stuff. And I felt like I couldn't be myself. Like I felt like a different person. When I took a drink, I was a different person. And so I would have 3 or 4 beers before I'd even go out to a party. And even now, like when I show up, I still feel that creep in from time to time. Mm. But I found it's interesting. That's been traded for other things like business and success and money and these kind of things. And it's like, well, I feel fine because other people know who I am, or it's influence, it's fame, it's these kind of things, whatever. It's all just kind of replacing that stuff from the past. So I totally feel that. And I'm sure a lot of people that are listening, they have something in their life that they could easily point to if they did the work. So I had to do a lot of work to figure out that some of those things were the cause of it, but the rooted cause, which is interesting of what we're talking about, is even deeper than that. So it's like the next step now is, okay, how do we pluck all this stuff out? And I was at the Super Bowl last week, and I'll tell you what, everybody in that room is like 6'5". It was all these athletes, all these sport. And I'm like this short white guy that's like 5'6", going, man, I feel out of place in this place right here. And so it's just interesting. It's all about like who we are as a person our entire life. So I love this stuff. I think that this is really incredible. And I think a lot of people listening are going to feel the same way. They're going to want to take another step. They want to figure it out. It sounds like the best place is the quiz.
Yeah, start with the quiz. I mean, look, you cannot change something if you don't have awareness. And the quiz is a great place to start. I also, if you enjoy this type of material, I have a podcast called How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. So it's on all the major podcast platforms. Go check that out. A couple of things I want to touch on that you said, though, Bill. Yeah. Number one is there's no such thing as an addictive personality. That's been disproven over and over and over again. There's a great book on quitting drinking called This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. And she talks a lot about the misnomers. Alcoholism doesn't run in families, just like depression doesn't run in families and anxiety doesn't run in families. What runs in families is the collateral damage, the trauma that is inflicted by the alcoholic or by the depressed parent or by the anxious person. So don't label yourself, oh, alcoholism runs in my family, so I've got alcoholism. That's complete BS. You don't have alcoholism because of it, the gene. You have it because when you're the daughter or son of an addict or an alcoholic, there's no addict that's ever walked the planet that felt enough. So if they don't feel enough, you're just passing it down. And my question to you, Bill, the last question was, when you were bullied, who did you tell about that?
I probably told my parents, but honestly, I probably didn't tell anyone. It probably went inside, like internal, if I really was honest, like the feelings about it. I just became like sarcastic, witty, ran faster, those kind of things. I probably mentioned it to my parents from time to time, but to be honest, I probably just pushed the majority of it down.
So usually that question is answered by, I told nobody.
Yep.
And I told nobody means that I, again, no knock on your parents. No. Your parents didn't create an environment of safety where you could come to them. So a lot of people believe, a lot of really smart people believe that the fact that you were bullied was because the perpetrators or the people doing it knew that you didn't have a safe place. It's just like people who sexually molest children. They know good and damn well that that child's not going to go tell their parent. So why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this so you have another piece of the puzzle, and other people out there who are listening to this and was like, wow, I was bullied too. And I either didn't tell anyone or I told my parents and they just poo-pooed it, which made it even worse. Because then I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting teased at school. I go to the one person who's supposed to protect me, and they don't protect me at all. They just look the other way.
Yeah.
That creates the pain that can create the meth addiction or the alcoholism or the food addiction or whatever. That is one example right there. Now, was anyone locked in a cage? Nope. Was anyone sexually molested? Nope. But that very example right there could cause someone to have shitty marriages and issues the rest of their life by the stories that they're telling themselves.
Yep. It's very powerful. And you mentioned Annie Grace. Annie's a really good friend of mine. It's an amazing book. Yeah. This Naked Mind is a fantastic book. If you, regardless of whether you drink or not drink, you should read that book.
Yes.
For sure. There's so much amazing information in there. It sold millions of copies. We actually did an interview in my airplane for my YouTube channel, Annie and I. It was one of my favorite interviews. We flew through the Grand Canyon. I love her. She's incredible. And
I want to get her on my podcast. So if you can make me an introduction,
oh, yeah,
that'd be
absolutely
awesome.
I can hook you up for sure. I was actually going to ask you after the interview, cause I wrote that down earlier, but I didn't think it would go well on the show, but I'm glad you brought it up because that book is incredible. Annie's amazing. In fact, I need to get her on the show and share it with you guys too. And I'm going to see her in another month or so. Every time I go out to Boise, she always flies with me. So she's incredible. Absolutely incredible. What should I have asked you that I didn't ask you?
Wow. You did a phenomenal job. I think the thought to leave people is if you're suffering, if you're struggling with something in life that has to do with your thoughts, and maybe you don't even know it has to do with your thoughts. We've listed so many things: overworking, racing mind, anxiety, you name it, bad marriage, obesity, whatever it is. If you've lost weight 20 times and you put it all back on, it's the same story. It's all connected. You can go to the best weight loss program on the planet, but until you figure out what caused you to put that weight on and what caused you to put that weight on is the same exact thing that caused you to drink or whatever it is. It's just avoiding the thing that you think is even worse that exists, but it doesn't need to exist in your adult life. So if you're suffering or struggling, I want you to know, whether you come to me or not and work with me or Yvonne, that there is a better way and that you weren't put on this earth to struggle and suffer. You were put on this earth to live an amazing life where you wake up every day, you get to do exactly what you want to do. And it's around people that you have deep connections with. That's what you were made to. And you were a miracle in it. Think about this. That one sperm met with that one egg. You're a miracle. So despite what people have told you your whole life, you're a miracle. You were put here for a reason. You have a massive mission. And once you do this work, it's just another byproduct. You often find, oh, this is why I'm here.
I love that. I think, you know, obviously every podcast I do is really pushing people to do, like, take another step, like go do something that better themselves, whether it's with us in our seven-figure runway or seven-figure altitude program, or it's something else that they need to do, whether it's, you know, listen to the podcast, something free, whatever, wherever they are in their world. I think the marriage of these two, and you've probably seen it in the past, of like a mastermind or a program or something for their business combined with work like this in their life for them individually, it just explodes. You mentioned the guy that you work with that has, you know, doubled his income. It's probably a good like bolt on to these things. Would you agree with that? Or like, what do you think?
100%. I mean, I'm in two masterminds with high level people, and the room, there's so many people suffering and struggling in there, and we're slowly trying to introduce it, but absolutely. I mean, it could be a mastermind in itself, but pair it with, you know, entrepreneurism. Yeah, man, it'd be a showstopper, because look, you can teach people. I mean, you're great at this. Teach people how to make millions and millions and millions of dollars. But then look at, you know, Kurt Cobain and Amy Winehouse and the list goes, Michael Jackson and Matthew Perry. All these people had all that money. What good did it do them? They're all dead because of these thoughts that they had from childhood. So, yeah, fix the issues that you have internally. And not only will you have more health and happiness and better relationships, but you're going to make more money. It's just going to happen, because happiness, money doesn't bring happiness. Happiness brings more money. That's proven scientifically. The happier you are, the more money you make.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's really fixing the foundation and the root cause of what's going on in all the areas like we talked about today. Brad, what's the link for the quiz again?
Yeah, bradchandler.com /quiz, or just go to bradchandler.com.
Cool. We'll put that in the show notes. And I just want to say thank you for coming on. I had a good time talking with you. And I know if you're listening, you're like, oh, hey, this real estate show. But look, this is the work that you need to do. This is the hard work that you need to do. You get this right, everything else is going to take care of itself, like we talked about. So obviously, I encourage you guys to go check out sevenfigureflipping.com, the runway program, all that stuff. But take the quiz. I'm going to go take the quiz. If my wife is open to it, I'm going to get her to take the quiz. Brad, how important is it to be honest? Obviously, I haven't seen the quiz. I haven't looked at it. But a lot of times we take something like this, we think about like aspirational type stuff versus what's really going on. Maybe real quick, share on
that.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you've got it. When you take that quiz, you've got to ask yourself, what have my results been thus far up, you know, in life? One of the questions is, do you have trouble experiencing a deeply connected, intimate relationship with someone you feel safe with? Well, if you're a month into a relationship with someone who you think you're in love with and things are going great, and you check that, you know, you don't have any problems with that, that's going to be misleading. Think about does every single relationship after 6 months or a year end up in, you know, Dunsville? If that's the case, then don't answer. Just ask yourself, what has generally my life results been like? And look, you can lie to yourself, but you're in this situation because you're lying to yourself. You're lying to yourself, believing something that isn't true. You are enough. You always were enough, and you will always be enough. And when you can start living in that truth, man, will things change in a good way.
Awesome. I love it. Thanks for being here, Brad. And everybody, I will see you on the next show.